You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Molly Wansel.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansel.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansel, and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansel.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming back. We've only been away a few weeks, but seems like a long time.
It does feel like a long time, but yeah. It's only like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yes, but it's very nice to be back, and very nice to have you. Now, we've got all sorts of people we must mention.
Oh, we've got some new Patreon members that I neglected to get Jeffrey to read out last time.
Well, welcome. It's Verity Halkett, Cara LeBlond, Saundra O'Shea, and Simon Warren.
No.
Welcome, all of you.
We've got two more.
Oh, hang on, two more. And also, new Patreon members, Erica Tingey and Jamie Nurcombe. I hope I've pronounced those correctly. Welcome, and we're going to do something specifically for Patreon.
Yeah, so we're going to do, it was recommended by our longtime listener, Phil Brown. Yes, he said, why don't we do, if the Patreon members can send in any questions they might have for myself or Jeffrey,
yes,
we'll do a sort of Q&A.
Absolutely.
On anything.
On anything.
Yeah, it's an open forum.
No, an open forum. But, I mean, obviously, we might do some true crime. We might do some about what it's like being an agent. We might do something what it's like being a writer.
Well, it depends what people ask us.
Depends on what they ask for. I got a lot of notes this week from people saying, why aren't you doing Murder by the Sea?
Yeah, well, that's understandable. Could you tell them to direct it towards the production company?
I did.
Okay, well, there you go. That's sensible. Yes, so if you write the questions and submit them on Patreon for Patreon members, and then we'll interview each other.
How do they submit them, Molly?
It's on Patreon. You have to go or do it through Patreon.
You go do it through Patreon. Yeah. Okay. Yes,
and,
I didn't know that.
And then we're going to film it. We'll film it and we'll put a little video up on the old Patreon page.
Very good.
There's a few fun vids up there, actually, for our members.
Yes, and we were going to do at some point, probably next month now in June, we were going to do some television and...
Oh, yeah, we're going to do some TV recs and some book recs, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe TV recs. We did some book recs last time, didn't we?
Yeah, TV recommendations sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay, you've had a terrible week. Why?
I can't talk about that stuff on...
It's just been a terrible week. I've just had a busy week.
Well, that's good. You like being busy.
I do. Yeah, except, I've been doing... I'm filming again next week, and the two cases I've got are not particularly pleasant. And these two cases, unfortunately, aren't very pleasant either, so it's been a bit
We often have a thing where we worry that some of it's too dark. Like, there's some cases that we think are too dark, and when we talk to production companies about ideas, they're always like, stay away from children... Like, stay away from this, that, and the other. And every single recommendation that we've had from a listener has been, like, child killing, mass murder, like, really, like, killing of pregnant wives.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Really, like, so you, the listeners, don't feel the same as...
Some production companies.
Yeah, who are making the content for you. But there you go.
Yes.
Anyway, we shall provide you with the content you so desire here on Blood Ties.
Yes, well, we are endeavouring to, and believe me, one of these cases recommended, were asked for by one of our listeners, is pretty bleak.
Is this the one we're doing first?
Yes, Shankill Butchers.
Shall we get on with it then?
Yes.
So it's we're doing Shankill Butchers, and it's suggested by someone. I'm afraid I don't know your name, but your Instagram handle is xflurex.
Xflurex. Well, thank you for suggesting it. It's you need to probably take a big, deep breath for this one, because well, I should let's start
okay,
it, Molly.
Well, here we go with the Shankill.
Butchers.
Shankill Butchers.
Perhaps I should give you a little bit of background. I, as a young reporter with the Times, was sent to Northern Ireland, to Ulster, on the first day of internment in 1971. I have never been so frightened in my life. It was a very dangerous, bloody day. And the Troubles, as they were known in the 70s and 80s, were a time of terrible trauma, with the Protestants and the Catholics literally killing each other, often in the most appalling ways. And this group, who became known as the Shankill Butchers, were theoretically a Protestant force who were attacking Catholics, but in my opinion, sectarianism had very little to do with it. This were just, unfortunately, a group of men, serial killers, who found each other. They are known to have killed 23 people, almost certainly killed more. And they didn't only kill Catholics, they also killed Protestants. But let's begin at the beginning. The Shankill Butchers was named after the road, Shankill Road, in Belfast. And if you know Belfast, from the port, there are a series of roads that lead out like spokes on a wheel. And some roads, the Falls is obviously a Catholic area, and the Shankill is obviously a Protestant area. And they're very, that's why they built peace walls, why they separated the areas out, because they were so. I remember being trapped in the Falls Road under attack from the Protestants, and the cameraman and I were, we were pretty frightened. It's a very scary place in 1971. I have to say, I've been back since, and it's a much cheerier place now, but I've been shot at, blown up, and I won't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend going back to those days. Anyway, the Shankill Butchers were started by a man called Lenny Murphy. More about his character in a minute. In September 1972, at the age of 20, he shot and killed a man called Ted Pavis, who was 32, in his home. The Ulster Volunteer Force, to which Murphy theoretically linked himself, a Protestant organisation, had said he'd been selling weapons to the Provisional IRA, their opponents, the Catholic IRA. Murphy, who was without question a aggressive psychopath, intimidated his accomplice in the killings, a man called Mervyn Connor, into a confession that he did it, and Connor killed himself. Murphy was tried and acquitted. However, as there was internment at that stage, he was immediately rearrested and interned, which by that means imprisoned, for 3 years. In May 1975, after he'd served the 3 years, he was released from prison, where, believe it or not, he'd married and had a daughter. I know, it gets more bizarre. Murphy became a rogue. He assembled a rogue unit outside the central commands of the Ulster Volunteer Force, in other words, the Central Protestant Command, and set himself up with a kind of hierarchy. His first lieutenant was called Mr. A, His second lieutenant was called Mr. B, but it actually was his brother John. And then he had some sergeants, one of whom was called William Moore, who was a taxi driver, and another was called Bobby Basher Bates. Moore had a large collection of knives because he worked in a meat processing factory as a butcher. Another of the sergeants was Big Sam McAllister. On the 2nd of October 1975, Murphy and his gang, including William Moore and Basher Bates, raided drinks premises staffed by two men and two women. When Moore discovered that they were all Catholics, he shot three of them dead and ordered the rest to kill the fourth. That was the first outpouring of the Shankill Butchers. Their headquarters was, of course, on the Shankill Road in a pub, in a room above a pub called the Brown Bear. If you've never been to Belfast, it's quite hard to realise it. We're talking about a very built-up area with houses very close together, with pubs on almost every corner, and with little closes at the back where you can get out into an alley. So you've got houses really cheek by jowl.
I'm feeling it's very Peaky Blinders-esque.
It's very Peaky Blinders. It's very like a sort of Coronation Street in a way. It's very cramped. And, of course, it being Belfast, where they are based, almost everybody knows everybody else's business. Never mind. Murphy and his mob, the butchers, on the night of the 24th of November, they went searching for a Catholic to abduct. They were searching in Moore's taxi. It was a black taxi, like you see them in London. In those points, quite a lot of the Belfast taxis were actually like London cabs. And they came across a man called Edward Crossan. They dragged him into the taxi and beat him up outrageously. Eventually, Murphy dragged him out of the taxi, took him into an alley, alleys between the two sets of houses, and slit his throat from ear to ear so badly that he almost decapitated him. I'd like to say it was unusual, but unfortunately it wasn't. On the 30th of November, just a few days later, Murphy executed Noel Nogshaw in front of an entire 20-strong Ulster Volunteer Force unit. He stood him up at the front, shot him, and went back to the bar. His mother and his brother, John, and Moore dumped the body half a mile away.
Could just get away with that, could you?
Well, the Ulster Volunteer Force weren't going to criticise Murphy, who was theoretically supporting them. You are talking about very troubled times.
Sounds very lawless.
It's very lawless. Anyway, on the 7th of February 1976 and on the 22nd of February 1976, two further men were killed by the Shankill Butchers. They were called Thomas Quinn and Francis Rice. And by now, the headlines are strong. These are the Shankill Butchers, and they are intent on intimidating at least the Catholic population. Well, they're certainly having the effect. Moore, however, now decides that he's going to sell the black cab and buy a yellow Ford Cortina, which had become their new method of transport.
Very inconspicuous.
Yes, but by the time they've got the headlines, they've attracted the attention of Detective Chief Inspector Jimmy Nesbitt, who is charged by the then called the Police Service of Northern Ireland. No, it wasn't called that. It was called the Royal Ulster Constabulary at that point. It didn't change until later. Charged by the Royal Ulster Constabulary with tracking down the gang. But they were careful and they were thorough. They would clean the premises, would bleach the premises, be very careful with the weaponry. And they would always stash it away in the hiding places. They weren't carrying the machete or the knife in their pocket all the time. But then, extraordinarily, Murphy goes even more rogue. And on the 11th of March, 1976, he tries to kill a Catholic lady in a drive-by shooting. He fails and gets arrested. Well, you might have thought, Mike knew, that that would be the end of the Butchers of Shankill, or the Shankill Butchers.
In a sense, not.
It wasn't. In prison, Murphy instructs Mr. A and Mr. B, his two lieutenants, that the cutthroat killings must go on. He then opts for a plea bargain on a firearms charge and gets 12 years. But the Butcher's killing spree goes on. Murphy is now directing it from inside jail. On the 1st of August 1976, another Catholic man called Con Neeson, who was 49, was attacked with a hatchet in the street. His brother said later he was butchered. Even our mother would not have recognised him.
That's grim.
Moore, who was now the de facto commander because Mr. A didn't go out on any particular jobs, apparently, was told that Murphy wanted more killings and they wanted three Catholics in a single day. So on the 30th of October 1976, three Catholics were duly killed and dumped in the Shankill Road as a sign that the butchers could do what they want. It's extraordinary that to describe it now, that we're talking about a city in the United Kingdom, a capital city of Ulster, Northern Ireland, theoretically shouldn't be lawless, but it was. And I can remember going and I remember driving down the Falls and the Shankill. 2 o'clock in the morning, there were bonfires everywhere. You know, there were men surrounding bonfires. It really was the Wild West. And you had bombings, you had bombs going off relentlessly. And of course, the IRA brought their campaign to London as well. So it was a really, well, frightening place to be. And there were some frightening people there. And the Shankill Butchers were certainly among the most frightening. But on the 10th of May, 1977, they made a mistake. They attacked a man called McClaverty and left him for dead in an alley. But a woman heard his cries for help and called the police. McClaverty didn't die. And DCI Nesbitt, seizing his chance, gets McClaverty, he's badly shaken up, but he disguises him and puts him in a car and they drive round the Shankill looking for the men who attacked him. He identified two. So for the first time, you have the outline of a police action against the Shankill Butchers. Nesbitt organised a swoop and swept up 11 members of the Shankill Butchers. There were all sorts of associates have taken part in some of the killings and not others. And after fierce interrogation, and I do mean that when I use the word fierce, I use it advisedly, these interrogations were not entirely by the Police and Criminal Evidence Act we now recognise in Britain. They were fierce. But then they were dealing with a very frightening situation, so one has to have some sympathy with the officers who were doing the interrogation. Gradually, the people that they'd arrested in the swoop began to admit the crimes and also admit that Murphy was directing the Shankill Butchers from prison. But there was no corroborating evidence or forensic evidence against either Mr. A or Mr. B or Murphy. McClaverty, the man whom they'd failed to kill and who identified the first two, was given a code name and sent to live in Dublin. And the 11 men in the swoop were finally brought to justice. And on the 20th of February 1979, 11 members of the gang were given no fewer than 42 life sentences. It's the biggest number of life sentences ever handed out in a British court to the members of the Shankill Butchers. But Murphy wasn't on trial that day.
Oh, so he was only in for 12 years.
Exactly. And on July the 16th, 1982, he was released.
So he got away with it, sort of. Oh, hold on.
One day later, he killed a Protestant man, beating him to death.
As soon as he got out of prison?
Mm-hmm. And then began to assemble a new group of Shankill Butchers. On the 29th of August, 82, he killed a part-time UDR soldier, the Ulster Defence Regiment soldier, who had been passing information to the UVF, rather like the first killing. On the 5th of September, he killed again, but this time, really only a dispute over money. It wasn't, these were not sectarian killings, these were killings.
Yeah. Did everyone know that at the time?
No, I think it only became clearer after the court case that and the 42 life sentences. Well, the Provisional IRA decided, a hit squad decided that they would kidnap a UVF soldier. And against the advice of UVF command, Murphy retaliated by kidnapping a man called Joseph Donegan, whom he tortured and killed at his home. There was no evidence and there was no arrest. But Murphy certainly killed him. Well, the Provisional IRA had had enough of Murphy. And not long after that killing, a hit squad executed Murphy. Two men got out of a car. He was getting divorced. He had a new girlfriend. He'd gone to visit her. He was coming through the back alley, out the back of the house. Mm-hmm. Two men got out of a car and fired 20 shots, killing him instantly. It's been suggested that the killing was helped by the command of the Ulster Volunteer Force because Murphy was so out of control. He was literally a loose cannon. And interestingly, UDA commander Jim Craig was later executed by his colleagues for treason. In other words, collaborating in Murphy's killing. Mm. I'm sorry, this is not a particularly jolly story. Predictably, Lenny Murphy's family said he wouldn't hurt a fly. His mother, Joyce, insisted, "My Lenny couldn't have killed a fly." His brother said he never did anything.
Well, I'm not surprised.
No, I'm not surprised, but it is quite remarkable. And he was given a full paramilitary funeral, attended by thousands of people.
Really?
Yep, including some unionist politicians. Mr. A and John Murphy's brother, Mr. B, were not involved in the march. I mean, you're talking about people who are fantastically tribal. I mean, you've only got to go to a marching season, march particularly in the Shankill. I mean, it's an extraordinary sight. You have men marching about, effectively in military uniform, though it's not quite. Mr. A went completely silent. Mr. B, John Murphy, was killed in a car accident in Belfast in August 1998. Only Mr. A is still alive. All the rest of the gang that were called the Shankill Butchers are now dead. They killed a minimum, as I said at the beginning, of 23 people, of whom at least six were Protestants. they terrorized Belfast, West Belfast, for a period between 1975 and 1982. They were ruthless, tribal, intensely devoted to one another, and it's as if you'd found a group of people who found each other. A marvellous book was written about the Butchers by a man called Martin Dillon, who was first published in 1988, and then, sorry, in 1989, and then it was republished in 1998. But I'll tell you how frightening that is. And Martin couldn't stay in Northern Ireland. He went to live in New York. He was so frightened for his own safety.
Mm.
But it is the only book, and very good it is too. It's still available. I think you can get it on Amazon. This is a story of wickedness and of human tragedy. It's the dark, dark stuff in the shadows. If you read the early novels of Gerald Seymour, which are many of which are set in Northern Ireland at this time, you'll get a feeling for what it was like. I've just, funny enough, reviewed a book this week by a very clever woman called Noreen Flynn called Northern Spy, which is about two sisters, one a BBC producer and the other a paramedic, who find themselves caught up in the troubles. And this is after the Good Friday Agreement, which theoretically put an end to all that. It's these are dark days. But, you know, it's very... I suppose we have to look into the darkness before we begin to see the light. I've often thought that. We have to confront the worst so that we can appreciate the best. And so that, darling, is the story of the Shankill Butchers.
Well, thank you very much, the Shankill Butchers.
Yes. I wonder if the man who suggested it, or the woman...
I think it was a woman.
Oh, whether the man or the woman who suggested it knew how bad they were.
I think so.
You think they just wanted...
I think she said that they're barely covered. Like, you don't hear about them.
No. No, as I say, the only really good book is Martin Dillard's.
Yeah. So also, I suppose, you know, it's good to, you know, cover things that people don't know as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Can we look, shall we talk about something cheerful?
Yeah.
What? Not too long before we might be able to go back to places again.
Oh, excited to see if Joe Allen will reopen.
Yes, we're very excited about that. Only a couple of weeks or so.
I'll probably cry if we get to go back there.
There's some story in the paper this morning that restaurateurs are finding it very hard to recruit staff.
Yeah,
because
I heard that.
They're all opening at the same time.
Yeah, and every single place I walk past says, we are hiring, we are hiring, we are hiring.
Yeah, yeah. I saw someone I walked this week.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to that very, very much. And, well...
I tried sitting outside having a drink this week. It's just too cold and not really for me.
No, I think it's a bit cold.
I found it so extraordinary because I don't obviously, like, I don't care. Not care, but I don't really go out, like, out much anyway. So, you know, I haven't missed that hugely. But as I was walking to this wine bar to meet my colleague and client... I went past this club where I used to go sometimes when I was in my early 20s, and it has a sort of outside bit, all these people queuing, and they had security guards, and all these ladies were all dressed up to the nines, and I was just like, oh God, made me feel really anxious.
Well, she thought it made you feel really old.
Yeah, and old, yeah.
Anxious and old.
Anxious and old, yeah. That's how I feel most of the time.
Yeah. Well, you're not long before you get your jabs.
Well, yeah, you keep saying that.
It's not long, because they've already allowed the 40-year-olds.
Yeah, Dan hasn't had his jabs yet.
I don't know. I'm going to.
Yeah.
Because they can go online and book a jab now.
Mm. Well, yeah, not long.
Not long.
Till jab time.
Nope.
So, yeah. Well, that will be exciting when things start to open up a bit.
Yes, I think so.
You'll get back to the Garrick?
Yeah, I'll go back to the Garrick. We're due to open on Monday the 17th of May.
Yes.
When there'll be a new podcast.
always a Monday.
And which I'm much looking forward to. One or two people have made a trip to the Chelsea Arts, which I did once, but it's a bit of a long way for me. And like Molly, I don't tend to go out an awful lot. I'm really quite housebound.
Yeah, I don't like to travel to go out.
No, I don't much.
I have a friend who lives in West London, and she's always like, "What?" I mean, I've once been to White City House. It's just so far away.
Yeah, it's a long way away.
I don't really like coming into town, let alone going across to a whole different side.
Yeah,
of
will it? Your office is not going to open though for ages, is it?
End of June.
Yeah, that sounds likely. When all lockdowns are theoretically coming to an end.
Yeah, it's also because we have to do refurbishment because we've got too many staff and not enough room.
Yep.
So yeah, not for a bit. Not for a bit. Still working from home, Betsy.
Betsy's working from home.
Betsy's working from home.
Well, darling, thank you. We'll thank all our friends.
Right, yes. Thank you to all the people who help us out and make it possible. Thank you to Sam Brain, our producer, my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for doing all the hard work, and to you, the listeners. Thank you.
And that's my view too. Thank you all for listening. We're so pleased you do, and you make a great deal of difference to us. And please keep doing it and tell your friends.
Oh yeah, please like, rate and subscribe.
Yes.
Or whatever. We're not as hugely good at self-promotion, are we?
Well, we're hoping to get something in the Sunday Times one day.
One day.
When my ship comes in.
It'll come in. It's just going slow.
Yes. It certainly is.
It's an 18th century liner.
Okay. Well,
slow travel.
But most of all,
it's a paddle boat. It's a steamer.
It's a steamer. Yes, I put it about right for me. But most of all, Mo, thank you for thinking up this idea. And as I often say to everyone, bad things happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.